Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, what the frack? Mile for mile, there are almost as many earthquakes rattling Oklahoma as California this year. So all they need is the weather and the showbiz executives, and they got the whole package. This major increase in seismic shaking led to a rare earthquake warning this week from the U.S. Geological Survey and the Oklahoma They have a geological survey in Oklahoma?
Really? Yeah, we survey the whole...
In a joint statement, the agency said the risk of a damaging earthquake, one larger than magnitude 5.0, has significantly increased in central Oklahoma. Geologists don't know where or when the state's next big earthquake will strike. We haven't seen this before in Oklahoma, so we had some concerns about putting a specific number on the chances of it, says a research geophysicist with the USGS, Earthquake Hazards Program. But we know from other cases around the world that if you have an increasing number of small earthquakes, the chances of a larger one will go up. This is the first time the USGS has issued an earthquake warning for the states east of the Rockies. Such seismic hazard assessments are typically issued for western states following large quakes to warn residents of the risk of aftershocks. The agencies took action after the rate of earthquakes in Oklahoma outpaced that of even California for the first few months of this year, although California regained the lead in April. The rate of earthquakes increased dramatically in March and April, said the geophysicist Robert Williams at USGS. That alerted us to examine this further and put out this advisory statement. The damage from a magnitude 5 quake could be widespread in Oklahoma. The last major one was in November 2011 when a magnitude 5.6 earthquake centered near Prague, Oklahoma. Or would that be Prague? Somebody's got to tell me. Scientists haven't ruled out natural causes for the increase, but many researchers suggest the deep injection wells used for the disposal of fracking wastewater could be causing the earthquake activity. Ongoing studies have found a link between Oklahoma's high-volume wastewater injection wells and regions with an increase in earthquakes. But, you know, for a couple more gallons, ain't it worth it? Come on. Really. Ladies and gentlemen, we're number one. The United States has the highest rate of first-day deaths in babies. Higher than any other industrialized nation, according to a report issued this week by the humanitarian group Save the Children. Throughout the world, the first day of life is the most hazardous time for a baby. Aside from if they are caught driving a car, which would really be bad news for the baby. Just over 1 million children die each year within 24 hours of being born. Save the Children's annual State of the World's Mothers report ranks 176 countries on levels of well-being among children and mothers. This year's edition put a special emphasis on newborn health, featuring its first ever birthday risk index. In the United States, babies are 50% more likely to die on the same day they were born than in all the other industrialized countries combined. There are other industrialized countries? Who are these people? Each year, nearly 11,300 babies die on the day they were born in the United States. American babies are twice as likely to die in their first 24 hours as European Union babies. Well, that's because the European Union babies hear the Eurovision Song Contest in their mother's... The findings don't surprise Save the Children's president, who said in an email interview, the U.S. consistently has a preterm birth weight rate far above those of other industrialized countries. Its high rate of premature births and its large population may partially explain why the U.S. tops other industrialized nations in first-day deaths for babies. Factors like poverty, stress, and teenage pregnancy, that is so 1995, also play a role, according to the Save the Children president. Babies born to the poorest mothers are 40% more likely to die than babies born to wealthy mothers. So, babies... choose your mother wisely. Hello, welcome to the show. This is for the folks in Colorado who now get to attend symphony concerts high on weed.
colored microbus plowing over rugged terrain. We're jacking the radio, passing the afternoon train. Around the roses, she shone as hyacinths and sage. Garden tools, sun lamps, and it's all the rage. Stay low to the ground, or they'll sniff you out. You never know what you will.
From Southern California, where you cannot yet bring pot to the symphony concert, as they announced you could in Denver before the city of Denver got testy about it. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of Le Show. And now, news of the Olympic movement. produced by Jim Ebersole Jr. Rio's preparations for holding the Olympic and Paralympic Games in 2016 has suffered more criticism after International Olympic Committee Executive Director Gilbert Feli admitted construction work at the Deodoro complex is 2 years behind schedule. Feli was appointed by the IOC President Thomas Bach last month to closely monitor preparations. He paid the first of expected to be many visits to Brazil last week to report on progress. Following that, he responded to questions on the progress at Deodoro, where 7 Olympic and 3 Paralympic sports will be held, with the answer, "Of course there are delays. Deodoro is 2 years late, but we're working together to deliver the games on time," unquote. He added the work had not even begun at the venue, and the delays in revealing the full budget for the games had also contributed to problems. The budget was completed only on April 16th. He insisted games organizers also have not created a satisfactory social legacy in the area. "It was a political will to put stadiums in a poor area of Rio," he said. "We always said, do not put there just the stadiums without posing a social program," apparently in his second language. "However, these programs do not exist today because the sports federations did not work. They have not taken the social part." He also speculated there will be no chance of significantly improving this legacy because it cannot be improvised and needs concerted planning by authorities and organizers, which has not occurred in the case of Rio. But wait. You probably heard a British report from the Evening Standard, a tabloid they give away for free in London, that London had been secretly asked if it would be able to host the 2016 Olympics in the midst of Rio's delays in preparation. But there's not a shred of truth in it, according to the International Olympic Committee spokesman. The Evening Standard reported, quote, "An informal approach was made by Olympics bosses to discover whether enough venues from the London Games could be brought back into use." They're being reused, aren't they? They're not just standing there. Oh. The newspaper reported Brazil had done 10% of Olympic prep work at a comparable stage to when London had 60% completed. It also said the chances of London actually being asked to host the games were infinitesimally small. It didn't prevent them from running this story. The report was totally without foundation and totally unfeasible, an IOC spokesman told the Associated Press. No city has hosted back-to-back Olympics. Innsbruck, Austria came the closest, hosting Winter Games in 1964... and 1976. That's nowhere near back-to-back. But it's Olympic back-to-back. No, not even that. We'll be monitoring the progress in Rio, by which we mean the lack of progress, as we get closer to the next Olympic Games. The Olympics, ladies and gentlemen, it's a movement. And we all need one. Every day. You know, it's almost time to feel sorry for Los Angeles Clippers owner Donald Sterling. 2 new audio tapes have surfaced this weekend in which he's confiding in a friend that he only said those remarks, which got him banned from the NBA, the National Basketball Association, because he was trying to bed the young lady he was talking to. You know, it's the best excuse in the world. I was trying to get laid. I'll say anything, said the 80-year-old Donald Sterling. Not his real name. But he says this all to a friend, a close friend, a friend who's apparently known him for years. And he says toward the end of the conversation, you know, I'm just saying this to you. This isn't going anywhere. And of course, the tape is now on the internet. It's almost enough to make Donald Sterling want to clam up. And speaking of which,
on May 6, 1985, identical twins were separated at birth. Tony Parker became a high school basketball star in his hometown in France. He went on to win rings and respect as a star on a small-town NBA team. Chris Parker, adopted by a grocer who sold insurance on the side, became a high school basketball star in his hometown in America. He spent 4 years with a successful small-town NBA team, but wanted to move to L.A. so he could sell insurance on the side. So he became a star with a team whose owner was known by everyone except the public as a kind of racist. Until recently. Funny things happen when you want to sell insurance on the side. So Tony has his championship rings, and his twin brother Chris spends the last half of every playoff season watching his commercials on the couch. When selling insurance on the side is in your blood, you know it. Find a State Farm agent. State Farm. It isn't a state, but it isn't a farm.
If you want me to love you, all that you must do is just say so.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, this week a listener shared with me another piece that's written on the subject of people beginning their sentences, especially in interviews with the word so, beginning their answers to questions that are not continuations of anything, by saying that it must have come out of the tech industry, and it's people who are trying to sound smarter than their questioner, and you know, it doesn't need interpretation. All it needs is repetition.
So at what point do you cross over the Rubicon and become someone who is looking for a financial pro?
So the conventional wisdom is that when you start getting ready to retire, that's the point at which things get complicated.
What websites would you recommend?
So there are different sort of levels of ways to do it yourself.
What are some of the common mistakes that people make when they try and get their hands around their finances?
So there are situations where the right thing to do financially might be counterintuitive.
It might be just to say the word so some more. Then this week, ladies and gentlemen, you're probably aware, the White House issued a climate report, which was alarming to some and disarming to others. It was explicated for listeners of Democracy Now! Thusly.
Talk about these overall findings and the significance of your report.
So this is the most comprehensive look yet at how climate change is already affecting the United States.
So could you speak specifically about the impacts here?
Absolutely. So some of the things that we highlighted in the Northeast are that we've had faster sea level rise than the global average.
What causes these kind of climate changes?
Yeah, so at the most general level, of course, as greenhouse gas concentrations have gone up, we got about 40% more carbon dioxide in the atmosphere now.
What more do you think needs to be done?
Yeah, so I'm glad you brought that up.
So what kinds of steps has New York taken, for example?
Okay, so New York City's done a variety of things.
Explain what causes this kind of intensity.
Yeah, so a hurricane, part of the story, it takes a lot of factors to come together to generate a hurricane.
And does the report make specific suggestions as to what particular cities and states ought to be doing to limit the effects of climate events like Hurricane Sandy?
Yeah, so what the report does is proposes a range of possible strategies.
Talk about the difference between what's happening in the Northeast and what's happening on the West Coast.
Yeah, so it's really important to emphasize that different regions are going to experience climate change in different ways.
What does the reports say about the likely impacts of climate change on food production?
Yeah, so the story on agriculture is a complicated one in the U.S.
So does the report say anything about how to make climate change a more urgent issue for more Americans?
So this report, for the first time, talks about communication strategies.
The Tennessee legislature not fully outlawing public transit, but going in that direction.
Yeah, so, I mean, we need to see these links.
So they say, so they say, so they say, so they say.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the atom.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Safe, safe, too cheap to meet. Cheap, safe, too safe to meet. Safe, safe, too safe to meet.
Addie the Atom, have you been out in the sun?
Yeah. What?
You look all red.
Huh. That's just my sunscreen.
Oh, Okay, then. Deadline Columbia, South Carolina. Water with traces of a radioactive hydrogen isotope, our old friend tritium, has leaked at a nuclear power plant in South Carolina.
But. Say the but.
But federal regulators said Thursday workers and the public were not at risk.
See? They always do.
The leak was reported Wednesday at the Oconee Nuclear Station, a 3-reactor site near Seneca, South Carolina, run by Duke Energy. You remember him. He used to play for the Dodgers. Water was being transferred from one chemical treatment pond to another when it leaked and began seeping from the ground, according to the NRC. Officials didn't say exactly how much water leaked, saying only it was more than 100 gallons.
Maybe 101.
Yeah, maybe. The spokeswoman for Duke Energy said the company voluntarily reported it, and all the leaked water was contained on site.
So don't go swimming on site.
Don't go swimming on. Good. A federal nuclear waste dump in New Mexico that was closed following a February radiation release might not fully reopen for another 3 years.
So hold on to your waste.
Hold, yes. Jim Blankenhorn, who is
the Jim Blankenhorn?
The Jim Blankenhorn, who is heading the effort to correct problems at the Waste Isolation Power Pilot Plant, the WIP, said at a public meeting this week it would likely be between 18 months and 3 years before normal operations are resumed at the underground waste repository. Crews are still descending into the tunnels of the waste site.
Those lucky crews.
Yes. To try to identify the cause of the radiation leak, which contaminated some site personnel way back in February. Stored radioactive waste containers that originated at Los Alamos are the current focus of the investigation. The halt in operations at WIP comes at a bad time for the U.S. government. The Energy Department's National Nuclear Security Administration, in a recent study of alternatives for disposing of surplus weapons-grade plutonium, identified downblending the fissile material and storing it at the WIP facility as the least expensive and most technically feasible of the possible options. The department has yet to decide on whether to pursue any of the studied alternatives, but says it intends to eventually mothball its current plutonium disposition effort, which involves the construction of a mixed oxide fuel facility in South Carolina.
I wouldn't want to be those moths.
In the wake of the shutdown of the New Mexico dump, Los Alamos for a while was sending its plutonium-contaminated waste to a temporary storage site in Texas. That was stopped earlier this month, as we reported on this broadcast, due to safety concerns. The New Mexico state government has given the Nuclear Weapons Laboratory until the end of June, before the peak wildfire season starts, to remove from its campus the waste-filled containers it stores above ground.
They can move them to your house, right?
They cannot. Dateline Indianapolis, the head of the National Transportation Board, said this week that the nation's railroads pose a catastrophic threat to the U.S. population. It was a point underscored in Indianapolis this week when a train carrying nuclear waste crashed into a truck loaded with pineapples on the city's east side.
When it's pineapples versus nuclear waste?
Yes. Bet on the waste. The collision occurred when a truck hauling nearly 43,000 pounds of pineapples hung up on the CSX track. Seconds later, a special Department of Defense train carrying a 500,000-pound container used to haul spent nuclear waste ripped the truck in two.
Hot sliced pineapple for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Indianapolis Homeland Security officials called the rail transport a pre-planned event. They called the accident unforeseen. Quote, you'd have to get with DOD to get information behind it. There's different things that come under that same type of container design, said the chief of Homeland Security for Indianapolis, Gary Kahns.
I'd like to hear from the pros.
But we can't release that information, he continued. CSX hauls freight and hazardous materials across 2,700 miles of track throughout Indiana. Indianapolis trains haul volatile cargo through some of the most critical infrastructure and the most densely populated neighborhoods in the city. CSX does make concessions to Indianapolis during major sporting events by posting railroad police officers along downtown rail lines, and it will not haul hazardous cargo through the city before, during, and after football, pro football, and pro basketball games. But this year alone, there have been 8 catastrophic rail accidents involving the derailments of trains hauling crude oil.
So that's nothing to do with me.
No, not at all. Deadline Taipei, the number one reactor at Taiwan's first nuclear power plant, may need to be decommissioned next year instead of in 2018 as scheduled, unless more space is made for storing spent fuel rods.
Again with the rods.
Again with the rods. According to data provided by the company, the storage pool for the plant houses 2,900 bundles of spent fuel rods, has only room for 101 more. That means the 120 fuel rods currently in use at the reactor can only be partially replaced when they're used up in November. The company is planning to replace just 94 to 98 of the fuel rod bundles, which allows the reactor to run for an extra year, but the spent rods will have to remain in the reactor.
Those damn rods.
Those damn rods, indeed. Clean, cheap, safe, those damn rods, too many rods to meter, our friend the atom. Ladies and gentlemen, Europe is in the news, especially Ukraine, of course. Although President Putin made statements this week that were widely interpreted as turning the temperature down on the crisis, his suggestion to ignore, his suggestion to put off the planned referendum in eastern Ukraine has been ignored by pro-Russian activists over there, giving rise to the impression that he doesn't control them, which may be a bit of theater or not. But if you really want to know what's going on in Ukraine, don't look to the Russians, don't look to the government in Kiev. Look to the Eurovision Song Contest this weekend. Here's a bit of the Ukrainian entry. So very Ukrainian, isn't it? The Eurovision Song Contest, it's more than five decades old. It includes such European countries as Israel, Malta, and Russia. And it's like Miss America meets The Voice, I guess, is the only way to understand it for Americans. Here, now, if you're Putin, he's supposedly been worried about what's been happening as the United States has encouraged the former Eastern European nations that were formerly in the Soviet zone to join NATO. So he's worried about encroachment near or on his border, supposedly. Imagine what he thinks when he hears these songs. That was from Ukraine. This is from Latvia.
I melted the ice of the polar caps, found the raiders of the Lost Ark. Solve the case for the genius on Baker Street. Help to clean the Central Park. I created the plan for the Chinese Wall. Went to desert, made it rain. Swam through a shark tank bloodily. Found Atlantis, by the way. But today, I've got a cake to bake. I got no clue at all. I've got a cake to bake. And haven't done that before. Don't be proud, mate, please don't bother. Go, come on, and ask your mother how to bake, bake that cake. A piece of cake. Tet, 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 to goo 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 goo. Tet, 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 to goo goo. Tet, 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 to goo 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 goo. Tet, tet, tet. Tet, 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 to goo 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 goo. Tet, 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 to goo goo. Tet, 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 to goo 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 goo. Tet, tet, tet. We've got a cake to bake, and got no clue at all. We've got a cake to bake, and haven't done that before. Don't be proud, mate, please don't bother. Go, come on, and ask your mother how to bake, bake that cake.
Gosh. And then on another part of the Russian border, here's another cake song from Belarus. Of all things, a boy band from Belarus. They're entitled.
Once I gave you one more chance, you showed me that. But I'm no Patrick Swayze, you're no Jennifer Grey. I told this story, but I'm so sorry. I lost
And if I'm Putin, I'm really scared now. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for me to read the trades for you. You've been probably spending part of each day worrying about who's going to be the new head of NPR. From Current, the trade magazine of public broadcasting, comes the answer to that burning question. I'll read it for you. Jarl Mohn, board chairman of LA's KPCC, not my home station, and a longtime media executive and venture capitalist, will be NPR's new CEO beginning the 1st of July. He replaces the interim CEO, Paul Haga, who stepped into the role almost a couple years ago after the previous CEO left to head the National Geographic Society. Wanted to look at more naked women, I guess. The network had 1,700 applicants for the job. Who's Jarl Mohn? He spent nearly three decades in leadership roles in various media companies. He was the general manager of MTV Networks from 1986 to 90, founder and CEO of the cable channel E. MTV and E. And non-executive chair of CNET. Now, that's at least a bit journalistic in nature. He served on the board of directors of the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communications. He began his career in 1967 as a disc jockey on commercial radio and spent 19 years on air under the pseudonym Lee Masters. Here he is with some of Lee Masters' journalism.
Jefferson Starship, at a recent party they threw in San Francisco, where they added a new gold record for their Earth album to their collection of 9 gold and 5 platinum LPs. Grateful Dead drummer Mickey Hart showed up. He was dressed as a Martian.
That was unearthed by the good folks at Current. His LinkedIn page also describes him as an early-stage investor in digital media. He's invested in tech companies such as Riot Games and Fanhattan. Quote, Jarl has a deep commitment to the public radio system, love of radio, and passion for quality journalism, said the chairman of the board of NPR and COO of Cleveland's IdeaStream. He's demonstrated throughout his career a keen ability to identify media and consumer trends. Well, that's what you want at the head of NPR, right? No? This is not a job for me. It is a mission, said Mohn. NPR is a national treasure, and more important now than ever. He's donated more than $260,000 to political campaigns, including $35,000 to the Obama Victory Fund last presidential election. He's donated primarily to Democratic candidates, but also supported some Republicans. According to Current, he also has some interesting stories about parties in the entertainment business. Your new head of NPR, Jarl Mohn, ladies and gentlemen. Who would have thunk it had I not read the trades for you? Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Don't tell Addie, but there's more news of the atom. Deadline Tokyo. You know about this ice wall they were going to build to keep the groundwater from, the irradiated groundwater from getting into the ocean? Well, dumb guy like me raised an eyebrow at the thought of it. Now, experts are expressing skepticism about the plan to build that costly underground frozen wall at Japan's crippled nuclear plant, a development that could delay the start of construction on the project. The experts and Japanese nuclear regulatory officials said during a meeting in Tokyo last week they weren't convinced the project can resolve the serious contaminated water problem at the Fuk Daiichi plant. The frozen wall is a $320 million government-funded project to surround the plant's four crippled reactors and their turbine buildings with an underground ice wall to block groundwater from flowing into the building's basements and mixing with highly radioactive water leaks from the melted cores. Government officials say a feasibility test at the plant run by TEPCO proved successful, but a commissioner with Japan's Nuclear Regulation Authority, Toyoshi Fuketa, said the hydrological impact of a frozen wall to the area was unclear. Quote, we need to know if a frozen wall is really effective, and more importantly, we need to know whether a frozen wall may cause any trouble. International experts have raised similar concerns. Experts have said that while a frozen wall is a proven technology, the size and planned duration of use at Fuk is, you know, unprecedented. But don't worry, the operator of Japan's crippled Fuk plant said last week it had booked a $4.3 billion annual net profit thanks to a rate hike for electricity and a massive government bailout. So TEPCO's doing all right. Now, ladies and gentlemen, you may have seen this week the World Health Organization having scared a lot of folks last week with talk of the post-antibiotic world we're entering. This week revealed that polio is back in at least three countries. Nigeria is one of them. Pakistan is one of them. They blamed international air travel for some of this. And that's the as far as the causation came to be recognized in most of the major media. But Pakistan's an interesting case because the Taliban have been attacking health workers, vaccination volunteers in Pakistan for the last 3 years, ever since, as part of the attempt to find and eliminate Osama bin Laden, the CIA dispatched a doctor, supposedly a vaccination volunteer, who in fact was spying on folks inside the bin Laden compound. Ever since then, the Taliban has warned people vaccination volunteers are American spies. Wonder how that all came about.
Okay. Room sealed?
Yes, sir.
Bug jamming engaged?
We had to reboot it, but we think it's up now, sir.
We think?
We have reasonable assurance that it's up.
Meaning?
The green light is on.
Okay. As you folks know, we've reached an inflection point in Operation Find Bin Laden. Progress, in fact, seems to have slowed since we changed the name of the mission from Operation Don't Say Name.
I don't want to say I told you so.
So don't.
Can I put it in an eyes-only memo?
I wouldn't. Virginia here is just back from in-country. Give us an up-to-date scrub.
Yes, sir. We have ability to report with a fair degree of certainty that the target individual is somewhere in Pakistan.
We've known that since 2004.
But not with this degree of certainty.
Don't piss on our sparkle.
Thanks. We believe that we're prepared to believe that he may be inside a 100-kilometer radius of Abbottabad, which, as you know from your briefing book, is a garrison town.
I didn't even know they had public radio.
Military garrison.
Just trying to break the tension.
I don't feel any tension.
Our problem is that within that radius, we have no way, given our lack of humint and sigint, or any int, to make a positive target identification.
Well, we've waited 8 years for one. What's the rush now?
White House has put us on the red list. They have their reasons. Mm.
Drone surveillance to achieve a target lock risks alerting the target.
Even with the new drone mufflers my team developed?
The drones are still vulnerable to being acquired visually by naked eye technology.
You mean they can be seen?
That's correct. Mm.
So what we really need is, ideally, some way of gaining a bulletproof chemical ID of the target individual.
Well, we know where they're buying their halal meat. We might be able to turn one of the meat couriers, get him to bring back out of the compound some plates or silverware with saliva samples.
Then we have the problem of identifying out of the dozens of folks in that compound the user of that particular plate or implement. White House does not want a mass killing, unless it's in self-defense.
Everything we do is in self-defense.
They mean really self-defense.
So, we're looking for a way to get individuated blood samples.
Bingo.
If I may, these folks don't play any gambling-type games.
Bingo the figure of speech, not the suggestion.
Got it.
Has Pakistan done a census lately? Census takers could come in and...
And take blood just for the hell of it?
I think some East Pak country verifies the census forms with some kind of blood test.
Pakistani government has emphasized through state they do not want any official connection with this operation. Need a non-governmental cover.
So, who can pass into any residence without encountering resistance and stick a needle into folks as part of his regular duties? Obviously, not an Avon lady.
Traveling methadone clinic?
This is Pakistan, not Afghanistan. No history of addiction in this quadrant.
You know, I'm sensing a certain resistance to the free flow of ideas here.
Just shooting down the crippled ones.
Let me go very blue sky here. Do they vaccinate for stuff?
We have reasonable certainty that Jenny McCarthy has no profile in country, so yes.
They've still got some polio?
A major vaccination program has been underway ever since Musharraf was given a cut of the vaccine deal.
Well, that's who goes around Abbottabad with our needle, Dr. Anti-Polio.
An NGO doctor and nurse can get in, vaccinate the children in the compound, and administer dummy booster shots to the adults.
Not a resource-intensive operation. Some needles and maybe a sterilizer.
Devil's advocate here. This works. We lock our target and neutralize him. Word gets out. There's a violent reaction against vaccination. Polio becomes endemic again.
And we've got our man. White House brownie points, and the Hollywood people pay us the happy ending bonus. I think it's a slam dunk.
I think it's a contested three-pointer, but I think it's worth taking.
I think it's a hook shot in the lane, but almost nobody practices the hook anymore.
And?
I'm not gay, but I don't follow sports.
Okay. I'm kicking this over to White House with a strong recommend. I'm going to unseal now. I don't think the oxygen ever kicked in.
And now the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
This is a new feature on the program that I've borrowed from the Washington Post. At least that's the way it looks. The Washington Post this week debuted a feature called Apologies of the Week. Isn't that nutty? I guess since they're owned by Amazon now, they can do anything they want. Dateline London, a British tabloid has apologized and paid damages to Harry Potter author J.K. Rowling over an article about her time as a single mother. She brought a libel case against the Daily Mail after it alleged in an article last September she told a false sob story on how people at her church stigmatized and taunted her for being a single mother on welfare. The paper printed an apology stating that Rowling, in fact, did not make any false claims. The paper said it had agreed to pay unspecified damages and legal costs to Rowling, who will donate the money to charity. Dateline Rialto, California. For the first time since news broke of a controversial Holocaust essay assignment, the Unified School District School Board took full responsibility for the task Wednesday night, telling a packed board chamber the assignment was horribly inappropriate. The board and staff are deeply sorry for the hurt and propagation of misinformation caused by this assignment, the statement began. There was no intent to be hurtful, but due to a lack of critical thought and a lack of internal checks and balances, the project commenced and turned into a horribly inappropriate assignment. The assignment, the district's approximately 2,000 to 8th graders were assigned an essay topic that directed them to, quote, read and discuss multiple credible articles on the issue and write an argumentative essay based on cited evidence in which you explained whether or not you believe the Holocaust was an actual event in history or merely a political scheme created to influence public emotion and gain wealth, unquote. But they're sorry. Good Morning America co-anchor Lara Spencer apologized this week for getting carried away during a Monday segment celebrating Cinco de Mayo. On Monday's show, she donned a sombrero, held a margarita, and celebrated Cinco de Drinco. And she wasn't the only one. MSNBC apologized for a Cinco de Mayo segment that featured a staff member on screen wearing a sombrero, shaking maracas, and taking a swig from a bottle of tequila. The network said The interlude was not intended to be disrespectful. The show apologized online. Seems to be a thing. Dateline Juneau, Alaska. Alaska Tenant Governor Hopeful Dan Sullivan said Wednesday he apologizes if he offended anyone with his use of the term slavery in comments he made about the payment of union dues. But in a statement late Wednesday afternoon, the Republican and current mayor of Anchorage said he remains opposed to rules compelling mandatory union membership for certain work, which he referred to as a form of, quote, economic slavery, unquote. To me, he said, the term has no racial connotations, except that people of all races may be prohibited from holding certain jobs unless they pay tribute to an organization they may not support, he said in his statement. Holocaust and slavery, folks, stay away from it. Stay away from them, both. Nothing but trouble. Dateline. Guess it's Tokyo. Nintendo this week apologized to gamers for leaving same-sex couples out of an upcoming life simulation game that lets players flirt, date, marry, and have children. The statement is an online movement emerged asking them to change Tomodachi Life. Quote, we apologize for disappointing many people by failing to include same-sex relationships in Tomodachi Life, the company said in a news release. And Nintendo dedication has always meant going beyond the games to promote a sense of community and to share a spirit of fun and joy. That's an apology disguised, that's a press release disguised as an apology, ladies and gentlemen. That's what that is. The apologies of the week with apologies to the Washington Post for having them steal it from me. A copyrighted feature of this broadcast. From Southern California, this is Le Show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the warm, won't you?
Soft, listen to the warm. We can listen to the warm.
Melting at one of the largest ice caps on Earth has produced a big jump in its flow speed, according to new satellite imagery. Ostfona on Norway's Svalbard archipelago covers about 8,000 square kilometers, had been relatively stable for many years, but the latest space data reveals a marked acceleration of the ice in its main outlet glacier to the Barents Sea. This research was presented in Brussels to mark the launch of the European Union's new Sentinel radar spacecraft. I guess that's where the Eurovision Song Contest will be held next year. This satellite has been in orbit barely a month, but it's already being tasked with a range of science observations. Scientists had suspected the Arctic's Ostfona ice cap was losing substantially more ice through its major drainage glacier at Kamp Mohn, any relation to Jarl, and asked if the Sentinel could take some pictures. The speed of a glacier is judged by how far prominent features such as a big crevasse travel in time. The Earth's ice caps and glaciers have become a key focus for scientists because these are the ice fields that appear to be experiencing the greatest change currently. Researchers have had some bad news for future farmers and eaters. As carbon dioxide levels rise this century, some grains and legumes will become significantly less nutritious than they are today. These new findings reported in the journal Nature. The researchers from Australia, Israel, Japan, and the United States looked at multiple varieties of wheat, rice, field peas, soybeans, maize, and sorghum grown in fields with atmospheric carbon dioxide levels like those expected in the middle of this century. The teams simulated high CO2 levels in open-air fields using a system called Free Air Concentration Enrichment, or FACE. I knew that they could. The experiments revealed that the nutritional quality of a number of the world's most important crop plants dropped in response to elevated CO2. The study contributed more than tenfold more data regarding both the zinc and iron content of the edible portions of crops than available from previous studies, according to the team. Zinc and iron went down significantly in wheat, rice, field peas, and soybeans. Wheat and rice also saw notable declines in protein content at higher CO2 levels. Nutrients in sorghum and maize remained relatively stable. So, more sorghum, please, Mom. It's estimated that ocean temperature warming will cause phytoplankton and zooplankton biomass to decrease by 6 and 11% respectively by the end of the century. A lower amount of these two main elements in the marine food web could reduce fish biomass in certain regions, since fish eat the plankton. These are some of the main conclusions drawn by research led by a Spanish research firm, Asti Tecualia, within a European project recently published in Global Change Biology Journal. And the federal agency charged with keeping track of sea levels, NOAA, says Grand Isle, Louisiana, has lost 1.32 inches of elevation to the Gulf of Mexico in the past 5 years alone, a rate of subsidence about four times faster than any other coastline in the lower 48 states and one of the highest on the planet. This is a report from The Lens in New Orleans. The rate is so high because the entire southeast portion of Louisiana is sinking while seas are rising worldwide. When subsidence is combined with sea level rise, the result is... News of the War, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. We'll be right back. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the Planet 7.490 megahertz shortwave, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and kcsn.org. Available for your smartphone through stitcher.com, then available as a free podcast from WWNO.org, iTunes, SoundCloud, and Sideshow Network. And it'd be just like selling insurance on the side if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. Tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Exile and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. Thanks to Jenny Lawson at WWNO in New Orleans for help with today's broadcast. The email address for this program and a playlist of the music heard here on, yep, there at harryshearer.com, along with those Cars I Talk t-shirts. And if you like Twitter, or if you're just like Twitter, I'm there at the Harry Shearer. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Change is Easy radio network. So long from sunny Southern California.